So thinking about this quality, tranquility, quality is a translation of the Pali term pasadhi, P-A-S-S-A-D-D-H-I, pasadhi. And this is the term that shows up in two places in our Anapanasati sequence, the sequence of steps of mindfulness of breathing. It shows up in the fourth step that you could translate to calming the bodily formations. The word is pasambayam, so bring to calmness or tranquility the bodily, kaya, formations, sankhara. Sankhara is like volitional stuff, all sorts of volitional stuff, formations, concepts, constructions. And in the body, you can think of this as, you know, calming the musculature, really, of the body, but it can also mean calming volitional bodily action, so settling more into stillness, right? Not following the impulse to move or fidget. But in practice, generally, it just means relax, you know, just relax the body, send the message to relax. And then it's the same word, you know, calming or bringing to tranquility. In step eight, the mental formations, citta sankhara. So citta is mind or heart, both. So this is the thoughts, feelings, concepts, inner structures. And again, in a very simple way, you can think of it as thoughts, but it's really the whole cognitive churn, letting that come to tranquility. And so over and over again in the discourses, the Buddha speaks of the power of tranquility. It's one of the seven awakening factors. It's one of the calming factors, naturally. Remember that the awakening factors have the one balancing factor of mindfulness, and then three arousing or activating factors of investigation and energy. This energy is like the energy of doing or forcefulness in your practice, virya, vigor, and piti, rapture. And then three calming factors, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity, concentration or immersion, samadhi. So tranquility is one of those. And tranquility, pasadhi, appears in a number of lists that detail the pathway of wholesome states that leads toward liberation. And it's almost always in a sequence where it follows the very pleasurable qualities like joy. And there's often a whole sequence that leads through like joy and rapture and bliss into tranquility and then into samadhi. And so we get a really important principle here that if we're bringing the citta sankhara, the mind stuff, to stillness, if we want to really come into samadhi, the balanced, centered, grounded, continuous stream of attention, the supporting factors for that are very positive and pleasurable, right? They're not just, you know, you control the thoughts or control the mind, but it's really, you know, experiencing joy, experiencing rapture, and those things support calm. So in some ways this might be obvious, like it's easier to feel calm when you're happy and at ease and safe. But I want to tease out a bit some of the implications of this using some of the trauma and nervous system language that many of us are familiar with. It always bears repeating. So shifting into modern language for a moment here, you can think of our response or reactive system as animals, as the kind of animals we are. This is called the autonomic nervous system. Autonomic meaning it mostly operates by itself. You don't need to tell it what to do. I mean, you can. It doesn't, just like feelings and thoughts, it doesn't necessarily do what you want. Again, you can set the conditions. But what it does is it governs several systems in our body that help with a lot of things, including how we keep ourselves safe in a not always safe ecosystem, but also how we figure out what to eat, what not to eat, who to get close to, who not to get close to. One of its primary activities is this activity of preserving safety by activating or deactivating mobilization in the body. So the autonomic nervous system generally has two primary patterns, and they are an activation pattern and a deactivation pattern. The activation pattern gets kicked on when threat or danger is sensed in some way, intuitively, physically, through one of your senses. And this is your sympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic system largely functions by shifting heart rate, shifting breathing rate, and shifting energy, essentially, away from less necessary in the immediate moment mechanisms like digestion, and toward self-protective mechanisms like the musculature. So in the classic modes of mobilization, that's fighting and fleeing, right? Fight and flight. So you might feel heat or buzzing or just power in your limbs when the sympathetic system turns on. The hands come into fists, you feel your arms, you feel the legs, there's readiness to run, readiness to hit. And of course, in our very complex social world, where we're not actually often attacked physically by other animals or natural forces somehow, where we have to fight or flee, but the attack is, and for some folks it is, of course, bows and infinite compassion to all of the wars and the attack and the true physical violence that's happening right now. But absent physical violence, much of us find our sympathetic nervous system aroused by social situations, by something someone said or did, or just by being in the cultures that we live in where there are pervasive systemic threats that many, many folks experience. And so the sympathetic activation, we are actually fairly simple animals at the root of it. It wants to manifest in simple muscular actions like fighting and running. But because we don't often do that, and anyway, that's often not the right solution to the thing that's threatening us, your full inbox or your fascist-leaning government or whatever you've got haunting you in the moment, the response often then comes out transmuted into emotions, right? So the fight system kind of shows itself as anger, rage, frustration, bitterness, complaining. And the flight system shows up as the fear spectrum of feelings, worry and fear and anxiety of various kinds. And so the sympathetic nervous system is here to protect you. And so all of those activations, both the physical and their emotional counterparts, are an attempt to mobilize the body, really, to get you back to safety, to restore safety, which is partly why it feels better to have a good rage, especially if you have someone there to support you doing it, or like Eliza, you just go scream under the train tracks as the train goes hurtling over. If you remember that scene from Cabaret. The trouble with the sympathetic nervous system for the kind of animals that we are is that many of us don't actually accomplish mobilization. So things happen, we feel under threat, we are actually under threat in various ways, physically, emotionally, systemically, subtly, in our family systems, in our cultural systems, out on the street, inside our house, inside our own minds, And we don't accomplish the thing that the sympathetic system is trying to do, which is mobilization will set us free, and restore safety. And in the absence of that, where does that mobilization go? And often what it does is some amount of it gets stuck in the musculature. So this is what like Wilhelm Reich would call the body armoring. And in trauma, we would just we'd call this a trauma symptom, And so now, something is happen something happens with my kid or my cat or at my job, or I see something on the screen or stub my toe or whatever it is, we're out of creamer, and the impulse is like, I can't stand it, I want to punch something, It's not about the creamer or the cat or the kid or the th anything. It's that there's sympathetic charge stored in my system, and I haven't been able to discharge it. And so the aim of a lot of trauma therapy is to get somatic access to unresolved sympathetic activation and give it the conditions to deactivate, right? And so you can see where we're going with this, heading toward what the Buddha is going to call tranquility. So that's the first step, is find deactivation. Because what sy the sympathetic system wants to do, it can only really engage that kind of mobilization for a fairly short time, and then it gets tired. The muscles get tired, we get exhausted, overwhelmed, right? Running away from a threat is not supposed to take more than 10 minutes, right? Like tigers give up very quickly. If you get away, you're away. And then you're safe again, right? So you can't maintain sympathetic activation for 20 years, right? And some of you are like, I totally can. Let me tell you, I've been feeling it since I was 12. And that's the problem, right? That's trauma. So if we're not resolving it, it's just in here. And you're going to feel it, it's going to come out in the moods and the emotions, and it's going to come out in an inability to concentrate. We're not going to find samadhi. We're not going to find tranquility because we're not tranquil, right? I'm still ready to punch somebody. So until that finds its way out of my system, I can't relax. So we're looking for deactivation. What we need to deactivate, right, what the sympathetic system wants to be able to deactivate is it wants to feel like I'm safe, right? Because it's operating on a really simple model of like scared by the tiger, ran home, and then once I was home and everybody else was around, tiger's not going to come here. I get to kind of shake it off, have dinner, tell the story, exaggerate it. Oh my God, I faced off the biggest tiger. It was actually just a baby. I don't know, whatever. It was actually just a bobcat. Actually, it was just my neighbor's cat. But, I freaked out. It was dark. Anyway, I'm home and I'm safe. And the sympathetic activation, drains away. And then I'm happy again. But when that doesn't happen, it gets stuck. So that's the first bad news. Second bad news is that it gets way worse than that. Because often what will happen is, you know, feeling that kind of mobilization, sympathetic activation, fight and flight and all that, all and particularly the emotions that come with it, it's actually kind of unbearable for a very long time. You can't actually feel rage for very long before your body, mind, your heart is like, this is too much. And so then the standard pathway, and this is what really starts to, you start to call something trauma, is that what seems to happen is that when sympathetic activation is too much to handle, it's too much to deal with, like you can't really be either in a full-on panic or a full-on rage for very long, the parasympathetic system, which is the deactivation system, kicks in. And it's not kicking in here in the like, ah, I'm safe back at home and the parasympathetic system takes over and I'm resting and I'm relaxed and I have dinner. Parasympathetic system also can kick in when you're overwhelmed with intense sympathetic activation, and it kicks into a state that's commonly called freeze or collapse. And you can just call it overwhelm. Freeze and collapse and overwhelm are numbing. You don't feel the pain as much. This is called shock. You know, right after an accident, you're in shock. You should be freaking out, but it was actually too much for your system to handle, and so you're unnaturally calm. And it's a good state to be familiar with. Again, you might be like, dude, I am so familiar with this. You know, I live there. As an American man who grew up in the 80s, I kind of live there. I certainly lived there for a very long time. A lot of work to come out of those states. Because freeze also, and you know, even more than sympathetic activation, which isn't easy to feel for a continuous amount of time, freeze is really states where at a low level you can live in them for a very long time, right? Your system can kind of just be like, it's all just a bit too much. And so I'm gonna just collapse a little bit over here inside. And how this comes out is like neutral affect, not much access to feeling, not much access to sensation, often not much access to sensuality, to pleasure, right? Because freeze will shut down both pain and pleasure. You know, in this culture, folks do a lot of things to maintain freeze, you know, binge watching things, binge eating things, there's lots of ways to stay numb, comfortably numb, as the old song would say. I'm going to talk about being a Gen Xer. And numb is comfortable, you know, and I don't fault it, right? Because the alternative is to come out of freeze and actually feel what sent you in. So folks come out of freeze into rage, into anger, into terror, you know, into, you know, or even in a more mild way, they just, you know, come out of freeze into confusion and like, who am I and what am I doing here? And what's this all been about? And this has been painful. And I'm, you know, I'm going on a spiritual search because I have to figure something out, you know, like, and that's mobilizing. All of that stuff is mobilizing. The thing that happens when you come out of freeze is you mobilize. And so it's, you know, it's good to have good therapeutic support for coming out of freeze and, you know, realizing that you're angry. That's a good to, you know, get a little support with, come out of freeze and realize that you're still terrified. But the project is the same, is to find the conditions for deactivation. And again, those conditions are going to be safety, safe social contact, you know, comfort, the sense of you know, being protected from threat, you know, and then it takes a little time. But the system wants to come out, you know, the animal does not want to stay numb and frozen or mobilized with fear or rage. And so if we understand the nervous system healing process as partly being about finding the conditions to support deactivation from high fixated states of sympathetic activation and parasympathetic overwhelm, so fight, flight, and freeze, then you know what we're looking for is what helps the body mind to come out of those states. And as a side note here, a bunch of folks, particularly folks coming through queer communities, have built on the fight, flight, freeze structure, which has been around for 30, 40 years or so, to talk about states that don't neatly fall into any one of those, particularly that manifest in social settings. And the most common of these that's been brought forward is the fawn state, where you're using social connection to try to stay safe. So like, you know, find the most powerful person in the room and kind of suck up to them, stay close to them. Make yourself small on purpose in order to not be threatened. These are fawning states. You can think of these as, you know, they have some mobilization in them. They're like, they're not completely frozen. You are actually doing something. You're using the social situation to try to be safe, but they're also not fully mobilized. You're not actually giving rise to feelings like, you know, okay, you know, getting close to the powerful person to try to stay safe, like that's okay, but it would be better if I could just leave. Right, that's not quite happening. Maybe you can't leave, and that, you know, so you know, there's times when it's necessary, but I think it includes some aspects of freeze, like there's some things that aren't available to the system, and then some aspects of mobilization, particularly using the social field. So you can say fight, flight, freeze, and fawn as a whole range of activated states where there's really not the perception of safety, right? Where there's the perception of danger or harm. So we're looking for how to deactivate from those states. And I really think that when the Buddha uses the term tranquility, bodily tranquility, mental tranquility, he's really speaking about deactivation. So if we phrase that in terms of, you know, the first steps of Anapanasati, that would be something like, you know, mindful one breathes in, mindful one breathes out. Breathing in and out, one understands the long breaths to be long breaths and the short breaths to be short breaths. And then breathing in and out, one feels the whole body. And then breathing in and out, one finds deactivation through the body. So this first set of steps is completely somatic, right? It's all bodily based. Connect with the breaths, connect with the whole body, and find deactivation in the body. When we are working somatically with trauma and the trauma symptoms of fixated or stuck fight, flight, and freeze and fawn in the body, you know, sympathetic activation that we're trying to find deactivation for. You know, like with mindfulness, there's two main things that we can do with our attention. One is you can turn your attention toward the thing that's painful. That will tend to bring activation. And or you can turn your attention away from the thing that's painful, which will tend to bring deactivation. This is partly why, you know, when things are really painful, distracting yourself, you know, by binge watching a bunch of things. Like maybe it's supporting freeze. Maybe it's also a way to get a little bit of deactivation on something that was too intense to handle, at least for a moment, right? So this basic principle applies. Often when you look at something, it feels more intense. Like when you look at a pain in meditation, it often feels like it hurts more as you focus on it. If you look away, your attention is not on something, you won't feel it as intensely. One of the things that you can do, that we can do, if we're trying to find deactivation of a stuck system, like a muscular system, like mobilization in the body, that's hard to get to find deactivation for, there can be an instinct. Often this comes in through mindfulness, especially if you've only heard mindfulness instructions and not samadhi instructions or nervous system instructions, trauma-based instructions. You can have the sense that the main thing to do is to be mindful of it. But that what that can really mean is look closely at it. So, I feel angry. Well, what does anger feel like? That's a mindfulness instruction. So I'm noticing, oh, what does it feel like? Oh, it's like a burning in my chest. Can you feel that burning? Yeah, I feel it burning. It's getting really hot, right? If I'm focusing on it, it's going to get bigger. And this can be wonderful sometimes, especially if there's a lot of freeze in the system. That's skillful to do. You have to actually mobilize it, which means you have to feel what's there. So for if I'm really freezy, focusing on it can help activate it. But remember that freeze is mostly a condition of being overwhelmed by it. So I focus on it, it gets a little bigger. Oh my God, I'm afraid. It's better to be frozen, and I can just kind of like wash out. I can't even really focus on it. I kind of just fog out. And I'm back in kind of my numb, overwhelmed space. I'll never get through this. It's just going to be like that forever, right? That's kind of freezy talk. And so often a skillful maneuver is to bring my attention somewhere else. And if I can, bring my attention to something that's pleasurable. So there's always going to be something that's either neutral or pleasurable available through one of your senses. Even if the body really hurts, there's probably something pretty in your room that you can look at. Even if there's really, if heartbreak is really here in my chest or my solar plexus, it's likely that my feet actually feel okay. My hands feel okay. And so you can do a mechanism where you bring your attention away from the intensity of whatever it is toward a more neutral or pleasurable sensation, either in the body or near the body. And so here's one of the sequences where we hear the Buddha talking about a pathway toward liberation, toward samadhi, and then liberation. This is a simpler version of a sequence that shows up as transcendent dependent origination. I'll talk about that sometime soon. But here's a simpler version. And the sequence goes something like this. From restraint of the senses, the mind doesn't get doesn't proliferate about, doesn't think a lot about what's going on in the senses. When the mind doesn't proliferate, joy springs up, right? So here, remember, note this sequence, right? Restraint of the senses leads to the mind not searching outward, which leads to joy, right? So there's restraint is the beginning, then the mind settles a bit, then joy arises. Being joyful, rapture arises. When the mind is full of rapture, the body becomes tranquil. There's prasaddhi, tranquility. When the body is tranquil, one feels bliss. And when blissful, the mind becomes immersed in samadhi. When the mind is immersed in samadhi, principles become clear. As principles become clear, liberation is close at hand. So, restraint of the senses, the mind settles, joy springs up, rapture springs up. When the mind is full of rapture, and you can think of that as the heart, really, also, the body becomes tranquil. So really notice the sequence here, right? Like joy, rapture, tranquility. Joy, rapture, tranquility, bliss, samadhi. I was just reading or paraphrasing from Sanyutta Nikaya 3597. It's on the sixth. It's one of the texts on the sense fields. But I just wanted you to hear that sequence, right? Settle the senses. That's somatic. Let the mind settle with the settled senses. This is, You could think of this with the step of connecting with the whole body. The senses are drawing inward. And then joy springs up. When there's joy, there's rapture. That's piti. That's going to be step five in this sequence. From piti, tranquility, right? The body becomes tranquil. From tranquility, bliss. From bliss, samadhi. So in these different ways, you know, these two systems are saying the same thing. We need contact with the pleasurable, the beautiful, the easeful, the safe, that which feels safe, in order for the body to really relax. And by relax, really, then we're going to mean come out of sympathetic activation, really make the conditions for the parasympathetic system to really kick in, you know, to come out of states of freeze and overwhelm, to come through mobilization, which we have to come through mobilization to get from freeze, you know, back down to a deactivated, available state where there's real presence, vigorous, bright presence. And so we're seeking the conditions for deactivation. And with that, then tranquility comes. And the most important weave here is to remember that negativity bias is going to want us to turn our attention toward the painful, toward the difficult, toward the oppression, toward that which is wrong. It's not wrong to do so, but it will have the effect of continuing activation. If you pay attention to what's wrong, activation will continue. In order to find deactivation, attention must be brought to that which is a condition for the animal body to feel that it's protected or safe again in the world, and to come into deactivation. All right. So pause there for now. Thank you.